Okay, and welcome back. This is going to be really fascinating, I guarantee it. We're going to talk to a gentleman I haven't spoken to in far too many years. His name is John Leonard Walson. John Walson, it's got to be 10 years ago now, began to send me videos and some still pictures of things that he was able to image with his telescope, going out to the English countryside at night, setting up his scope, cold, warm, it didn't matter. He was always looking. And he would find things up there in orbit, near orbit, deep orbit. I don't know how deep they were, but they were up there. And when you look at them through the telescope, they look like a star, just a little white dot. John somehow was able to adjust that telescope to the point that when he began to focus and zoom in on the object, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it got to be scary because you saw an obvious machine. No, not a satellite, a machine, as in spaceship, spacecraft. Remember the secret space fleet? These things came one after another after another. I put so many pictures up. We did many, many programs, talked on air and off air about this. He began to get hassled at home by the British government, helicopters over his house. And I'm talking about big helicopters right over his house. He could have thrown a rock and hit one. They came that close. We'll get into that in a little bit. Now, what I'd like to do is first say hello to my friend John Leonard Walson, and then we're going to say hello to our second guest as well. John, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, Jeff. Nice to hear you again.
Oh, yeah. It's been too long, John. I'm very, very glad that we got this connection put together. We want to thank, of course, Frank Chile for helping with all of this. And you've got a gentleman with you who works on this, I guess, with you. His name is Marcel King. Marcel, are you there?
Good morning, Jeff, or rather good evening where you are.
Indeed. 8 o'clock here. It's, what is it, 5 a.m. there? 4?
It's just gone 4.
4. Well, I'm sorry, but you both sound alive and at it, so that's good. Now, John Walson, tell us a little bit about Marcel King, if you would.
He's a very amazing astronomer, engineer, inventor, entrepreneur. He's been a lot of help dealing with all sorts of technical issues. He's also a very good friend.
Good. All right. How long have you been working with him?
Approximately, must be 3 or 4 years now.
Now, the last time, and I'll never forget this, that we were working on your project, and they're just stunning. You had a video, and I mentioned this to you in an email today, I think it was today, of a second camera. Well, maybe it was a primary camera, but it was behind you and your telescope at night, in the dark of night, and you had your video view screen was there, it was operable, and we could watch through the second camera the actual video cam view screen as John would maneuver the telescope and then enlarge objects in space. Little white dots. You could actually see them on the screen as a little white dot and watch as he zoomed in and how they became bigger and bigger, and then they became something shocking. That was a great video. Have you ever tried to duplicate that video?
All the time, yeah. I could do it, you know, anytime anybody wants. The actual video you're talking about was with another very nice friend of mine,
uh-huh,
called Duncan Davis. He has been also very kind over a number of years. That was the video you were talking about. It was really good.
See, that to me showed any doubter that there was no possible hijinks going on here. What we were seeing in the videos you were releasing was there on the view screen in real life, real time, video recorded for everyone to see. And it was really an amazing thing. And it's good that you've kept that up. This whole field of finding things in orbit. Marcel King, what are your thoughts about what John Leonard Walson has found up there? What do you make of all this? And why aren't, how many amateur astronomers are there on the planet? Hundreds of thousands. Why John, and what is it about John that makes him so special?
Well, for me, I've got a personal interest because of I'm an amateur astronomer myself.
Yeah.
And because I had a very close-up sighting of an object when I was younger, that led me into the field of unexplained things in the sky. Obviously, I've looked at planets being an amateur astronomer. And obviously, when I bumped into John and I saw what John was getting,
yeah,
and I've actually seen them myself, it's just, it's amazing. And I just want to get this out to people that these things are there, these things are real, and John can find them.
You know, okay, you just put your finger on something that's crucial to understanding this whole program that we're going to present to you in the next couple of hours. John is able to find them. Now, space is a big area up there, and these are not the easiest things to find. But you, Marcel, have found them on your own, correct? Not maybe a whole lot, but you've found some of them.
I've certainly seen things that I can't explain, and I've certainly found things on the moon that I can't explain. And I'm quite a level-headed person. I've been in the field of communications and computer science.
Uh-huh.
So I'm quite a level-headed person, and I can't explain these things at all.
Well, I can't either, and I've been watching them through the kind efforts of John for a long time, and I'm elated to be able to present this to all of you tonight who don't know about what's up there floating and stationary. I'm not always stationary, but these things are up there, and they're moving around the planet, or the planet is turning under them, or, John Walson, are they staying stationary with the rotation of the planet? Are these stationary, synchronous, geosynchronous orbits? What are they? What are these things hanging out in terms of the geometry of space?
Yeah, I mean, I was told they're the secret Star Wars project by a very important person called Jerry Gilmore, professor of experimental astronomy.
I know who it is. That's a very, very highly regarded source. So he said these were the Star Wars relics or active configuration of the whole program up there.
Well, he said without doubt they are the Star Wars project. I'm just quoting what he's always said to me, and no one's ever picked that up. It's always been shunned. I mean, the only person that really has ever picked it up was you way back in 2007. As I said, you know, I've gone out live with these objects in space, you know, literally live broadcast them on YouTube. You know, you can't get any better than that for proof.
I've seen the recording of that. John has live streamed the imaging of these objects with his telescope online. And as he just said, you can't get any more real than that. So we're going to go and look at a lot of pictures in the next couple of hours and talk about this. What has changed about these objects, John, in the 10 years since you got into this in earnest? Is there any kind of a shift in the entire paradigm of these objects in orbit?
Cool. Yeah, there's been since 2007, getting back to the atmosphere, and the conditions, even looking at the moon as well, there's been such a difference in the quality of, and the times you can see these things with bad weather, spraying of the sky, It was so funny once. I was getting ready, preparing to look at the moon and space objects, and I just noticed these crosshairs in the sky, like literally someone had sprayed across with an airplane.
Big
And
X.
I thought, yeah, I thought that's a bit odd. X marks the spot, and I thought, let's film it, for records. So I start filming it, and out the corner of one of these trails that had been left by an aircraft, this big bright object starts to appear. And literally, I film it, I zoom right in. I've sent you one of the pictures, which we'll probably talk about. Like a, it literally looked like a disc, a UFO disc, and it starts coming down, and it starts spinning and rotating. And I'm thinking, is this a drone? It really looks like an intelligently controlled object, and I'm thinking, wow, this is not a plane, it's not a helicopter, it's not Superman. And literally, it's coming down, and it's an incredible video, which we can talk about if you want to. And yeah, conditions, it's got worse. It's the sky's changed, and
Oh,
the
it's
resolution.
gotten dirtier and muggier, and it's just yeah. Now, let me ask another question. What would you describe as the general height of these orbits? Deep orbits, shallow orbits, or do they range the gamut?
Well, to be geostationary, I would imagine they're much closer than anyone would think. I mean, to be quoted as the Star Wars project, it's got to be around just a bit further than, sort of like the space station, I would presume. It's very hard to judge, the distance, really.
Yes, of course.
So there is another person that's actually been actually seeing these, which I was explained by Jerry Gilmore, and also NASA's quoted to me. I mean, they've emailed me as well. I think you've seen those emails, haven't you? Where they quote Johnson Space Center built things to get them where they need to go. So that very important sentence by NASA to say, to get them where they need to go. Number one, to get who? To get where? And, it's not the space station. They're actually quoting that Johnson Space Center build things to get them where they need to go. So who's been building things that have not been announced to the public to get, astronauts going somewhere,
You've
could be.
Marcel, you know about the discussion about the secret deep space fleet that we supposedly have, and some people say, well, where would they get the money to do that? Well, they have as much money as they need. They want $1 trillion, they get $1 trillion. They've been doing this for a long time. In your field of amateur astronomy, do many other people buy into the idea that there are spacecraft up there and that they are traveling around potentially our solar system? Or is that something that's still considered to be, you don't want to talk about it unless you're among friends?
I think from years ago, I think there's a lot more people think that that's possible now, for lots of reasons. I mean, you've got younger people now are not as gullible as they used to be and sort of believe everything they're told by the press or the government. You've got the technology now going actually back a bit on getting these objects from 10 years ago to now. Remember now, the technology in the optics and the cameras are far better than they were 10 years ago, which of course allows us to get more things because the cameras are much better quality. But I think people generally now are starting to ask more questions, and I think certainly more people believe in other civilizations. You've got scientists now every week saying they're finding new planets. It's all starting to, I think people are starting to turn and ask questions about this now, whereas maybe years ago they never used to, because of course if anyone mentioned it, they'd be laughed at.
Right. There used to be total denial. Now they're asking specific questions of inquiry about the subject rather than just denying it.
Exactly. Exactly right.
All right. Very good. Now, John, when we used to have our marathon conversations and things, I'd say, how in the heck do you know where to look for these things? And you had a wonderful response, and I'll never forget it. So I don't know if you remember it, but maybe millions of people have asked you since, but you have a special ability in this field. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, it's very simple. All you do, I don't know if you know what soldiers wear on the side of their gen night vision, which it's when it goes green. You know the equipment?
Vaguely, not a lot, but I've heard of it.
Well, it's very sensitive equipment that lets you see in the dark, and if you point it up to the sky, it literally, you know, makes it like daylight. You know, all the stars light up, so everything that moves, you will see. So it's very easy. And what you do, you get one of these gen night vision tubes, and you can put them onto the back of a finder scope, which is literally like when you're holding a gun, you've got a rifle, which is the finder scope.
Uh-huh.
So literally that is the gen night vision tube. You put that on the side of your big telescope. So you put that on the side, and whatever you're seeing through that finder scope, literally will transfer to your main telescope.
Oh, I
then
see.
What you do, it's very simple. You can get like a webcam that goes on the back of the gen night vision tube finder scope, which mm-hmm. will become your eye. So you imagine you're lining up with your rifle, you're looking through your finder scope, which is the gen tube, and you literally can hold and move your telescope until you see, you know, like when you're outside and you're looking at, you see a bright object move across the sky. Have you ever done that?
Yes.
Yeah. So all you do, literally, you move your finder scope, you pan it around the sky, and you can see one of these bright objects starting to move, which is, number one, it's either going to be a satellite or one of these Star Wars projects or uh-huh, uh-huh. something.
Satellites shouldn't be still and then start to move. That's the big difference.
Well, some things do, and I've filmed it doing it, yes. which is incredible. Yes. So literally, you just hold it, and you can move your telescope, which you can do manually and freely. But these telescopes are very, very good because there's a piece of software that can control this gen night vision that you're looking at with attached to your actual finder scope, which is attached to a webcam, which can be attached to your computer. And that software, once it's locked onto a bright moving object, can control your telescope to track it. So it's very simple.
Wow.
And then obviously why it's tracking it, it's you can actually see it in the main finder of the actual.
Yeah, you've got a video view screen.
That's it. That's it, yeah.
Watch it right
and there. Yeah, you're right now, there.
Now this is Gen 2 night vision stuff, and yet it has the ability to look into deepest space, well, as deep as we want, and somehow yep. make that more available to you. That's really interesting. I thought the Gen 2 stuff was much more earthbound than that.
No, it's depends what you put it on. If you put it on the back of a normal telescope, right on the back, like an F10, it's useless. It doesn't see much. It's very dark. But if you put a gen night vision tube, if you used to buy one, you take the lens off it and put that gen night vision tube on the back of, say, for instance, you know, sort of F3 or up to the most, if you know, something like that, you'd be seeing a wider field of view. So it's like looking through a pair of binoculars. But if you, as I said, put it on the back of a telescope, it's just too much for the actual gen tube to handle. It's all dull. So it's best to put it on the finder scope. And I'm not the only person to do this. Way back In 2007,
Yeah.
Jerry Gilmore was telling me there's actual other people that have done it before me, and his colleagues as well. If you go to Jerry Gilmore, or Google Jerry Gilmore, and his actual web page that he's got at the university in Cambridge, he actually explained to me, it's quite funny how this works, and I've explained it to you in a way you understand. But he said it, he said his colleagues have been doing it as well, exactly what like what I'm doing. And his colleagues at the university called it lucky imaging. I
I
found that
remember that. I remember that.
quite funny for a university or the Institute of Astronomy in Cambridge call something lucky imaging. I mean, I suppose it is luck really, because you're using, it's like fishing. You're just like moving it around the sky, and I suppose it's pure luck if you manage to, lock onto one of these things, because they're quite hard to look at even through binoculars when you're looking at them. I don't know
Yeah,
if you've
they're just
tried.
teeny tiny little dots of light. And now you told me once long ago, 10 years ago, that you had a sense and that you felt that you kind of knew where to look.
Well,
An
after
instinct.
years, literally years of doing this, Jeff, you do get to sort of like, get to know where to look in the sky. That's what I mean. It's not that, it's not some, spooky sense. It's not that. It's just
Oh,
literally
I
after years
yeah. I
of
didn't mean
doing it,
paranormal. I got it. It's just it's repetitive searching and
that's
imaging over and over and over again.
yeah,
What
because it's been
John,
years.
what oh, finish up. Go ahead. I'm sorry, we've got a little bit of a delay here. Go ahead.
Sorry, it's been years, so you get to know.
Yeah. What is the size of your telescope now? I think you used to have an 8-inch diameter scope. Is that right? Do you have a bigger one now?
That's right, 8 inch. And this is another amazing thing that the professor actually commented on. You don't need a big scope to actually, like a 24-inch or a meter-sized telescope to see these things, because big doesn't always mean better. Basically, the actual conditions that a telescope would work in perfectly. It's, say for instance, you've got a smaller telescope, you can take that about all over the place, and you can look up in the sky, and with conditions that you meet up in the sky, a smaller telescope sometimes is better, because if you've got a bigger one, it just makes what you're seeing a lot more worse, unfortunately. So yeah, I started off with a little telescope, and I thought, oh, let's get a bigger one, because I thought it would be better. And to my shock, sometimes it's not. And when you're out, when it's freezing cold, doing this hobby, you get dew, and dew turns to ice on your lens. And with a bigger telescope, you're at the mercy of the dew turning to ice much more with a bigger telescope. I found even if you use a dew shield, which is something that you can put on the end of the telescope to protect you from dew, smog, and all the rubbish that's coming down from the sky laying on your on the front of your lens. And the actual method is good, but it, with a bigger telescope, it's much more harder to control. So I thought, how can I back engineer the size of the big telescope to work on the little telescope? And I did it. I did it way back in 2003. Was the first time I got hold of a normal Sony camcorder. Because you can ask me, how do I zoom in? Which is your next question, is it, Jeff? I don't know.
Just might be, yes.
Yeah. So basically, to zoom in, I got hold of this simple Sony camcorder. You can do it with really any camcorder, but these old Sony ones had, if you flicked a switch, it sort of did, you know, a gen tube sort of like imitation. It went green. It intensified what you were looking at.
Infrared.
So I got one of the
infrared, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I poked off the lens, which you don't normally shouldn't do if you've got one of these, because way back in 2003 and 4, they were quite expensive, like, you know, £300. And so you'd pick your lens and poke your lens off with a screwdriver. That's your main lens on the camcorder. Until you exposed, you could see the CCD chip that was inside.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd do, I'd leave the barrel in. So when you use the zoom function, you would get a slight zoom. So basically, I'd put that on the back of the telescope instead of your eyepiece. So I'd be exposing the light that came through the actual telescope to the CCD chip, which was on the back of the Handycam. And this would give you a high readout, which was a fast readout.
High resolution, quick readout. This was the discovery you made. And we didn't used to talk about this on air, so it's nice that you're sharing that. But this was John's own discovery about how to make this work, and it plays a huge role in his ability to find and discern and to record these images. Let me ask Marcel another question. Marcel, since John uses about an 8-inch scope, I'm a little bit familiar with an 8-inch Meade telescope. That have scopes in the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years changed a lot, or are they pretty much the same? Did they get optically where they needed to get to be really competent?
If you want the truth, telescopes haven't really changed in 20 years. They're still basically the same. They just use a tube and a mirror. But obviously, what has changed is the cameras you can put on the back end now, which of course give you, you've got HD, you've got 4K video now. So obviously the resolution of the image you can capture on the camera now is far better than it ever used to be.
But that's amazing.
The telescopes are still exactly the same.
So it go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right, Marcel. I mean, way back in 2003-04 when I started doing this, the resolution you were stuck with was PAL. And zooming in, as you can see, some of the old footage was when it was raw, which people don't seem to understand. When you film something in space, you get this raw image and you have to process it to look sharp. And I was always giving out raw footage. And when you're zooming in slightly, you just zoom in a little bit with your camcorder using the barrel that's still in there to get closer to these objects. Professor Jerry Gilmore was saying that his colleagues are doing the same sort of thing, but they had the privilege to use BBC cameras, which is much more you know, sort of that resolution, not actual real BBC cameras, but he was explaining to me that sort of quality they got hold of. And we're doing, at the similar sort of time as me, the same thing, using high readout cameras. And what they would then do after capturing an image of something, they would actually process it in something similar to Registat.
Uh-huh.
And that would, like Marcel does, he does very well, and lots of astronomers around the world doing this hobby, they will actually capture a short section of footage. Then they would put it in a computer, and then they would literally get the computer would pick all the good frames out of the, say, little section of video.
Oh, the software is that good. It can just go through and grab, got 30 frames a second, thereabout, and you can go and pull all the good ones. Wow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and then stack it all into a really nice picture. But I haven't been doing that. You know, specifically when I've sent pictures to you in the old days, I would always send you the raw still frame grab. But it's much better. You get much more better results, like, the, you know, Jerry Gilmore and his colleagues at the actual, you know, it's called Lucky Imaging, the actual website, which he explains. Mm-hmm. And they actually do this in their procedure that they do. So, yeah, you know, I mean, getting back to actually who else has done it as well, which is a miracle that's never been mentioned, is a chap called Ron Downswish or something. He's now the head of, is it actual Clay Center Observatory? And he was doing it before me on a small 8-inch ME telescope, and the same sort of way, tracking it the same sort of way. It's incredible that, you know, I've, you know, sort of only been sort of, you know, all over the internet saying, you know, it's only me doing this. But I've every time I have tried to share these emails with Jerry Gilmore that sent me explaining other people have been doing it, including him.
Well, you used to send those emails to me. We used to talk about this, and you had nothing but kind words to say. I will say, though, from my perspective as a reporter, a journalist, at some point, you deserve, and there are others, you deserve the highest recognition for pioneering this and taking it to the level you have. And it cost you dearly. We're going to talk about that. We're going to look at some freeze frames and some video. Now, we've talked about objects in Earth orbit that are going to just knock your socks off. But there are also images and video of the moon's surface, which are going to do the exact same thing. When I used to watch the raw video that John would send me, I felt like I was just above the moon's surface and floating right along with his imagery. It was stunning. And this live feed that he did, this live net feed of the moon's surface, well, stay tuned. What I'd like you to do is go ahead and load up, don't cheat now, the first video photo link under John Walson and Marcel King's name at Rents. You'll see there's three photo links there. And I want you to please load up number one. Try not to go ahead. Let us walk you through this. It's more fun that way. It's called page one. All right? Page one of photos in Guests. You'll find it. This is it's truly a world exclusive. And even though we started doing this over 10 years ago, it's great to have John back. We have so much to cover. So load up that first page of images. Marcel, are you on a computer now? Are you able to look at the images as we go through these?
Whereabouts are the images?
If you look on the left-hand side of rents.com, and you'll find Guests. It says the word Monday in green, then it says TexMars, and under that it's got John and your name. It's about just maybe 10% down the page. You'll find it. There's a picture of Kim Jong-un, and then there's a picture under that of some Muslims. And if you look right to the left of the picture of Muslims, one of them says, "I will kill you." Just a coincidence that you're to the left of that. So look to the left of that. There's three columns. Look over to your left. See if you find your name there. Look for John's name and your name.
You'll see a picture of Jeff with his white hair, and then you'll come down and you'll see a planet, and then you come down a bit further.
That's it.
And you'll see, you keep on
Monday.
Coming past the adverts. You keep on going, and it's just there. Can you see that?
Just go to where it says right below the planet with the comet going around it.
That's it.
And then you'll see the green Monday, then you'll see the Guests, and then under John and Marcel, you'll see page one, page two, page three.
I've got it. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm there.
You got
you,
it?
You said a very,
you got
yep,
it, John?
I've got it. You said a very important thing just now, which I'd like to pick up on. When did I first start showing you these very zoom sections of the moon and these objects? Can you remember when that was, when I was doing this live to you?
Oh, it's got to be 10, 12 years. I don't know, a long time ago.
That's it. Exactly. So this is the most incredible thing, that way back 10, 12 years ago, it was just, you know, such an incredible privilege to be able to zoom into the moon and these objects like this. And
it was staggering to me, shocking. And then when the Indians, India put up a satellite, if I remember right, that went around the moon and got some images that weren't nearly as good as yours.
That's what I was shocked about. Yeah, so it's incredible. It's also, it's such a privilege to do this hobby. You know, it really is.
Yeah. Well, you're very kind, and I really appreciate that about you. You're not in this for any other reason than it is science, and we're trying to figure out what's going on. So let's look at page one, everyone, yep. And you'll have the first image up there is a blue image. It's kind of a blue image, and you'll see below that is a bigger image of the same thing. What number one is an enlargement of the lower portion of the second image. Now, what that image is, I want you to look at the second image first. That is that is an object. That is an object. It is a machine of some kind in orbit. Okay? It's lit up on each end. It appears to be fully functional. Now ask yourself, is that a satellite that's been enclosed in a nose cone of a rocket and sent up there? No. That is a big object. We don't know how big, but it is real, and it is large. Tell us more. Just about this first one.
Yeah, as you can see, it's a still frame. It's not a processed still frame from stacking lots of images, because I've got that actual object. I've got that on film, which I'm not sure if you've seen the actual footage of that. It's incredible. And I managed to, because what I've been doing since 2003 and 2004, I've been getting to the point where it's around, shall we say, 4 in the morning, where it's just still dark, where you can lock onto these objects and see them in the finderscope. And I've managed to keep them, you know, in my actual finderscope and main telescope, and, you know, film them sometimes in the day, which is quite an incredible thing to do. So what that is I've been told the secret Star Wars project after a professor looking at these, you know, and I've continued to film the same ones over all these years. So I would presume that it's what he told me it was, the secret Star Wars project. That's what I think it is. You know, I'm not sure what you think it is, Jeff. Have you any ideas at all?
Well, it's not a McDonald's. It's a machine. What else can I say? It's some kind of a space machine. Does it travel from here to Mars? Does it have a travel distance from here to the moon? I don't know. Look at the length. Look at picture number two. Look at the length of the actual body. You'll see clearly geometry in there. These are not random images. They're long tubes. Yep. Or long bars or something that are holding one end apart from the other end. Maybe one end is a propulsion system. I don't know. But it's clearly a ship of some kind.
Yeah.
To me.
So getting back to what it could be, I mean, NASA, a chap called Henry Klein, he was a very, you know, good person to look at these. He was the sort of head person at the graphical, you know, sort of like department, editing department. He would be someone that would get images from the real NASA footage tapes to prepare them for the public to see. He was chatting like you were to me for a long time about these. And he explained, I'll quote his, you know, email. He explained that some of these could be military classified, but also, very importantly, Johnson Space Center make things that are actually to deal with human space flight. And he actually said that NASA only build things like robots, and they don't build large, elaborate spacecraft to get them where they need to go. And I'm actually quoting one of his emails. So he's actually sort of like saying that these are actually large, elaborate spacecraft to get sort of, astronauts, where they need to go. So that's we've got to take that into account as well. What is the secret Star Wars project? What's the secret space program? Is it actual just satellites to watch us in space, or is the secret space program a whole fleet of elaborate spacecraft, which quote NASA emails to me, build elaborate spacecraft to get them where they need to go? We've got to ask, what is this? Is it one of those, or is it just orbiting, our planet watching us? That's the big question.
Very good. Very good. Okay, anything you want to add to this first two pictures? And remember, the second image is the wide shot of the object. The first image is the close-up of the bottom of it, as we look at the picture of the bottom of it. Marcel?
A couple of things to add to what John's just said. Actual fact, first of all, do you know what NASA stands for, Jeff?
National Aeronautics and Space Administration.
No, NASA stands for Never a Straight Answer. I just
That too,
thought
that too. I didn't know you want me to tell the truth, but you got it. Never a straight answer. Oh, yeah.
Just quickly going back on that, last year there was an elderly gentleman who was the director of the Skunk Works for, it was either Boeing or McDonnell Douglas, and the gentleman didn't have long to live, and he wrote a affidavit out stating that we currently have craft up in space, and we have the technology now to zip to Mars and back, and we have had that technology for many years. So that's very interesting to note as well.
Does that work for you?
I personally believe that, yes. I personally believe that the governments have retrieved objects from space. I believe they've back-engineered some of these objects, and I believe they have a fleet up there. And again, to back that up, you've got people like Gary McQuinnan. Do you remember Gary from
Oh,
the
of course.
UK?
Yeah.
Yep.
One.
Well,
Yeah.
that just backs it up even more, doesn't it, really?
I agree with you. Now, the other thing that is important to mention here is that this is going on right now. This doesn't just come and go. It's essentially up, they're up there all the time. We're going to get to the moon images too a little later, so sit tight for that. Let's move on down to image number 3 and 4, and the same thing. Go to number 4 first. That's the wide angle. Then back up and look at the enhancement, the enlargement of the bottom one half of it. This is a lot. Look at the long version, the unenlarged version. It's a long object. This is a machine of some kind. It's structural. It's clearly geometric. It's not random. It's not a lens smudge. And you have two portions that are apparently lit up. I don't, unless you want to say, well, these are solar glaring portions, which I don't think. But this is a long object. And the more you look at it, the more detail. If you have a magnifying glass, for example, you can look at it up closer and you'll see little detail that at a glance your eye will not give you. This is an extraordinary object, and it's up there. It looks like it could be as big as a submarine. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, the most amazing thing is that's just come out is I think you've had on your show, and you have him back regularly.
Bill
Is
Tompkins.
yeah, isn't it amazing for him to,
Oh, yeah.
come forward? And he's actually, it's like a miracle. He's got drawings of all these that look identical to these. It's just incredible. I don't know if you want to say a bit more about that, Jeff.
Well, I think that most people listening are well familiar with Mr. Bill Tompkins, and his story is extraordinary. And I want to move through these pictures, so we'll just leave that to Bill. He'll be able to see these pictures before he's on the program next, so it'll be fascinating to get his take on this. He's the man who really began talking about the deep space fleet that we have up there.
Yep.
And he has just contributed mightily to our understanding of what is potentially going on up there. I'll leave it all to you to make your own decisions. That's the best we can do. Let's look at the next image, number four. There are two of them, and they're very similar, but they're flipped. You can see one end is on one end the first time, and then the images are flipped so you can get a different perspective of it. That's and I hope all of you listening, or most all of you, are able to see these. You can see on the top image what appears to be solar reflection off of some kind of metal at the bottom end of it. If you look very carefully at it, then the center appears to be illuminated somehow, and then behind the center, moving up toward the top, if that's the top, are looks like segmented portions of the top part of the structure of this craft. Let's think of these as submarines just for fun, because that's kind of what they look like. Spaceships, submarines. But this is the same object flipped. And please don't steal these images, ladies and gentlemen. They're all copyrighted, and we're presenting them to you for the courtesy of John, and certainly Marcel is here as well. We want to share. These are the property of John Leonard Walson, and they should be honored as such. So you're welcome to link to them here as much as you want. They'll be up there for you, but please don't take them. All right. Now, I think of all the nights that John used to tell me he'd be up on some hilltop, literally freezing, cold, and still at it, still at it. So that's a spectacular view of that entire craft, whatever that object is. And again, I defy anyone to try to tell me that came out of a nose cone on a rocket. That is not a satellite deployed. It is something entirely different. And those are not solar panels off a center section. Look at it. You can see the glare, especially on the top picture, which says, please do not copy. Look at the bottom of it. That's metal, and it's glaring from the sun, reflecting. Fascinating. All right, let's go down and look at the next one now. This one's a little more raggedy, but it's a different craft, a different object captured by John. It's in color. John, tell us about this one. What do you think?
Yeah, again, you've got the sort of like distortion of the atmosphere, which is, again, coming up when it's that was recorded in the daytime. So you've got not only the heat, etc., all adds to the distortion of the picture, but it's still, I've still managed to capture this object. And it's incredible that you've got, at one end, it appears to be some sort of structural part where you might have the power source, I'm not sure. And at the other end, you've got another sort of section, maybe, I don't know, where the, like NASA said, quoting their words, where the humans are, where they, sort of build elaborate spacecraft. I'm not sure, but I've got all these emails and all these references from NASA and from Professor Jerry Gilmore, and it's those actual sort of explanations from NASA and top quality people in sort of universities have actually said what these are. These actual quotes have never been really pushed forward, sort of to show the public. I mean, you're the only one who's actually, really had the sort of like courage to put these emails out. And I think one of them contacted you and said, look, you're not allowed to show them. But he actually said it. Why would he say to me that they're the space secret Star Wars project? If they weren't, he must know what the secret Star Wars project looks like.
Yes.
He must have seen it to compare it to mine, to say mine are it. He shouldn't have said they are the secret Star Wars project if they're not. I mean, that's like, I'm an amateur astronomer, it's my hobby. I just contacted him, and asked him, look, what are these? He gave his professional opinion. He shouldn't have said it if it wasn't true,
Correct.
So, and no one ever pushes these emails to the public, except you. I mean, if you Google my name, you'll get, first of all, above Top Secret or some other chat room trying to spread muck about me, saying that these are tinfoil little models hanging from a tree, which
oh,
I video.
Please.
Yeah. So they're not, and no one ever, when I try and confront people, they never will talk about Jerry Gilmore or NASA saying that they're the secret Star Wars project. You'll never get any skeptic admitting that those emails are real. Or if you talk to a skeptic, you will never get mm-hmm. them to even look at these emails. They won't even mention them because they're so scared to admit that their colleagues are actually telling amateurs that this is the secret Star Wars project. And I'm not the only person to film it. As I said, you've got other people that are now being given these amazing jobs, like Clay, sort of observatory. He wasn't the actual manager or the head of it, but way back in 2003 and up to 2007, this chap called Don Dannon Switch, I did send you his name. Way back then, he was just filming these objects up in space, which I was told by Jerry Gilmore, mm-hmm. the professor at Cambridge University. And now he's the head of Clay Center Observatory.
Wow. Fascinating. Fascinating. Hold on a minute, John. We have to pause here on that note. And the next picture up is darker. And wow, when the more you look at it, the more detail you see. It's just stunning. We'll be right back and begin looking at more pictures. And then we're going to go to the moon. And then we're going to show you what happened to John at home when he began doing this 10, 11 years ago on this program. Boy, did they come after him. Stand by. We'll be right back.